Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Bicycle season is here, and with it, the dangers. They can be urban dangers, suburban dangers, rural dangers. Coming up later, we'll talk to a local biking organization about biking events and advice about biking fun in Central Ohio. Joining us now is Cincinnati lawyer and bike-related law specialist Steve Magus. Welcome back to the show, Steve.
Well, hi, Ann. Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming down to the studio.
It's always a fun drive from Cincinnati to Columbus, you know.
Also with us is Leslie Strader from the Columbus Mayor's Office of Environmental Stewardship. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Three fatal crashes in Ohio in 2013 so far. Well, I should say 13's over with. Each a rear ender caused by a motorist passing too closely. A few years ago, you said that biking in Ohio wasn't too risky. That was 2012. Do you feel the same, Steve Magus?
I do. There are going to be crashes. And when I looked at the numbers kind of coming into today, Ohio averages around 2,000 crashes a year. That maybe seems like a lot, a little, I don't know. But when you compare it to the cars, there's about 500,000 people involved in 300,000 or 400,000 car crashes a year. So we're at the very small end of the crash spectrum. We know that there's millions of cyclists that ride millions of miles each year. And, you know, sometimes some of them are going to do dumb things and get in the way of cars. And sometimes motorists are going to do dumb things and hit them. This year, we've had three fatal crashes, which is not a big number, so to speak, in Ohio. We average around 16 fatal bike crashes a year. These three are all very similar. They all occurred on two-lane roads, broad daylight.
Not super early in the morning.
No,
right?
not like dusk or dawn, and not like as the sun's going down. Necessarily, there was one where the fella said he couldn't see the cyclist because the sun was in his eyes. That was the boy that was killed, I think that was in Miami County. Mm-hmm. And the first one was a hit-and-run drunk driver. That fellow was captured, and he's being prosecuted in Claremont County. And then the third one was recently a lawyer from Columbus, Joe Giampapa, who was a fellow who I vaguely remember. He was a year behind me in law school, but I know he was very popular attorney
very
and cyclist
in the,
here in town.
Those are the ones that die.
Yeah.
There are a lot of other people like Travis Freeman who are seriously injured.
Fortunately, there's not a lot, but there are certainly a decent number of folks who get hurt pretty badly. They count by incapacitating injuries. The Ohio Department of Public Safety breaks these numbers down based on whatever boxes the investigating officer checks at the scene. So it's not highly scientific, but then we do have some numbers on those things. But there are certainly crashes and people get hurt. Some people get hurt very badly. There's Travis's case. He was hurt very badly, but fortunately, he's doing well for someone who got hit hard by a car.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Steve Magus, Cincinnati lawyer and bike-related law specialist. Also, Leslie Strader from the Columbus Mayor's Office of Environmental Stewardship is with us. We're talking about safe biking in Columbus. Tis the season. If you have a question or comment, if you have an idea for safe biking, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Leslie Strader, what do you hear from at the mayor's office about the biking situation in Ohio, in Columbus and in Central Ohio? What news are you hearing from people out there when they call to give comments?
Primarily, we hear a lot of enthusiasm. People want to be cycling. There are varying preferences on where those cyclists want to be. Some feel most comfortable staying on trails, and so we've built a lot of those to accommodate folks that fall into that category. But there are other cyclists that feel that the road is where they want to be. It's the most efficient way to get them to their destination. They're not riding just for fun. They're riding to work. They're riding to the grocery store, and that's all great. And so we want to encourage that by making sure we have accommodations on the roadway for them, like bike lanes and sharrows to remind drivers that they should be expecting that there are bikes using the roadway as well.
Is there a growing number of people that want to use the roadways? Is that a trend at this point, or is it somewhat static? How's that working?
I don't have data on that right now, but one of the things that we are planning to do with our new bike plan is to actually increase the amount of bike and pedestrian counts that we're doing. So we'll have some better data on how many users there are on in various areas. And then using that data, we can actually target where we put new bike accommodations. So in high use spots.
Steve Magus, I see, I'm on the bike trail every morning, and I see a lot more people on the weekends when the weather changes. I don't see a lot more people during the day, though, using the bike trail. And that's a pretty good bike trail heading straight south or north, depending on where you're going.
And I'm my familiarity isn't as good as yours, but I understand a lot of people commute on that trail in the mornings and then commute home at night. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's what the usage is of any bike trail Monday mm-hmm. through Friday.
But just in general, people using biking as a form of transportation and not a sport necessarily. Or
I see more of it. The folks that count commuters, you know, there is some sort of self-reported data out there that seems to show that commuting is up and that people are taking a more interest in it. There's products that are developed and clothing being developed and some high-end stuff that's developed. And we also see a lot more urban cycling today than we did even 5 years ago, where people choosing their residence to be closer to their business so they can kind of become less car dependent. And it's the old model of move to the suburbs, buy a big car, drive an hour to work, you know, pay $1,000 or $2,000 a year to park it and then drive it home isn't working for a lot of people anymore.
So, Leslie Strader, tell us about the bike plan. What is it and how far along is it?
Yeah, so in 2008, we had what we called the Bicentennial Bikeway Master Plan. So it was specific projects that we wanted to take on, and we've made great progress with that. We had maps that showed which roadways we were going to prioritize. This plan is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be a little more focused on the communications aspects of cycling, building support for our projects, hearing from the community what their level of comfort is on the roadway, on trails, see what they think Columbus needs and responding to those needs.
You can join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can tweet us at WOSU All Sides or check us out on Facebook page. Steve Magus, you've noted the Dispatch reported that cycling crashes were down by about half, from about 2,900 to 1,500, but that there are changes in how the crashes are counted. You said the Department of Public Safety does that?
They do. There's a reporting system based on the boxes that are checked on the crash reports. So the crashes that they count are crashes that occur on the road. We don't have counts for crashes that occur on the bike trail, for example.
Okay.
And my understanding is that in years past, the magic number was $400 of property damage was sort of the level of a crash that got counted. And then that changed, and it went up to $1,000 in property damage. And so what the dispatch reporter called me was asking me about that, because I was printing the same numbers he was, and there was only 1,500 crashes last year. Normally, we get around 2,000. That didn't make sense to me, and we talked about it a bit. And then the next day, they ran a big article that said these crashes are way down. And when I floated that around, I was told, well, this change occurred. And when I looked at the numbers, sure enough, the fatal crashes are about the same. The serious injury crashes are about the same. And where we see a difference is in the property-only crashes and the minor injury crashes, which tends to support this thought that, well, maybe some cop at the scene said, well, I don't think this is $1,000. And so that crash didn't get reported as it might have in years past. So it's hard to tell if every year from now we're getting around 1,500 crashes, and maybe that theory holds up. But I don't think there's a huge drop in the crashes, because the fatal crashes and the serious injuries are just about the same as they've been for the last 10 years.
Leslie, we're going to talk with Steve Magus in just a second about proposed law changes. And I was wondering if there's any part of the Columbus Bike Plan that involves, as far as the communication goes, supporting law changes.
It certainly could. Actually, as a separate issue, one thing that we've been actually looking at is a new code change that would Insurer cyclists would receive 3 feet clearance in passing and actually 6 feet for commercial vehicles. So that's something that we've been working closely with the Yay Bikes and Consider Biking on to make sure that it fits their needs and serves the biking community.
Okay, we'll be hearing from Yay Bikes after our next break. Let's talk about the 3-foot proposal. Is it dead in Ohio, Steve Magus?
Absolutely not. It was for a long time. And in fact, the representative who brought the 3-foot proposal to the table, when he started adding up the votes to get it out of committee, didn't have the votes. And so there was some discussion of pulling it. That generated quite a bit of uproar, I think, from cyclists around the state. I think he heard that. And given these recent crashes and some other things that have been going on from the advocacy side, I think he's going to keep that 3-foot provision in the bill. There's 2 provisions in the bill. The other one is not controversial. I don't know why the 3-foot one is controversial, but apparently there are some folks on the House committee that couldn't see the wisdom of it to vote for it. So he's hoping to change their minds and bring it to a vote sometime this year yet.
Marcia in Blacklick, you're on the air. Hi, Marcia.
Hi. I'd like to address a problem that I've seen after recent crashes in social media. People commenting on these crashes, many of them people who don't understand cycling or have never depended on their bicycle for transportation, seem to be of the opinion that bicyclists don't belong on the road, that they should only ride on bicycle paths, and the road is for cars. And I would like to see a public service campaign encouraging people to share the road with cyclists.
Well, I think, you know, Marcia, you bring up a topic that comes up every time and should come up every time, mm-hmm. and that is the question of what are the rights of bicyclists? And they do have a right to the roadway. They do have a right to use it, just like cars do. Is there anything in the Columbus Bike Plan, Leslie Strader, to address the public, public education about these issues?
Yeah, so just like the caller said, the exact words, share the road, that is a campaign that we have in Columbus.
But is there a sense that people understand that this isn't just a nicety, that this is the law?
We've tried our best to help
share
people understand
that. Sounds nice.
Yeah.
Steve Magus,
I wrote a piece that got probably the most popular hit on my webpage called Share the Road Stinks. And I walk through the thought that you had, which is it's an altruistic concept that has no business in the law. The law does not say share the road. In fact, what the law says is when you make your choice to ride a bicycle and you cross the white line, you're in the game. And you have exactly and precisely the same right of way as anyone driving a VW Beetle or a Humvee or an 18-wheeler or a school bus. You have the right to go forward in an uninterrupted manner, and people have to respect that right. And that's the real issue, is that, number one, there's some people that feel that bikes shouldn't be on the roads. Well, you know what? We fought that battle back in the 80s, and that was the 1880s. And the case law that came out and all the laws that have developed around the country, the bike is a vehicle in every state, and you can ride on the road in every state. So this concept of share the road sort of developed as a more, the way I describe it, it's more like a sign that says to motorists, bicyclists may get in your way, you know, so it's just like we're being asked to give up something.
Yeah. And I don't mean to suggest that being nice isn't a part of the lexicon, that the nature of niceties aren't important. We'll talk about kind of that other side of the coin, bikers, bicyclists who abuse the roadways as well when we return. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage.
but you'll look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. This hour, we're discussing bicycle riding, bicycle safety. Still with us, Cincinnati lawyer and bike-related law specialist Steve Magus. Also, Leslie Strader of the Columbus Mayor's Office of Environmental Stewardship. And joining us now is Executive Director of Yay Bikes. It's a nonprofit that promotes biking in Central Ohio. Catherine Gervis, welcome to the show, Catherine.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. What a great topic.
We have some callers. First, I want to get to an email from John. He writes, my brother Bob Lennon was killed by a hit-and-run driver, a driver who should never have been behind the wheel. I certainly don't condone hitting and killing cyclists, let alone leaving them to die. But even before his death and previous accidents, I was convinced bicyclists have no more business on the road than I have getting in a boxing ring with the heavyweight champ. It's not a fair contest. I love biking along the Olentangy bike path, but it makes me nervous getting there, and it's only 3 blocks in residential traffic. I think you have to have a death wish to get on the road with cars and trucks, especially a busy one like High Street. I fully agree that bikers have the right to be there. We also have the right to smoke, eat our way up to 400 pounds, and have unprotected sex with strangers and walk in the worst parts of town at midnight. That doesn't mean we should do it.
Hi.
Why don't I just swat that one over to you, Catherine Gervis?
I'll tell you, I can't imagine what it would be like, what it would be like to lose a brother. Like, what a horrible, horrible accident. And as someone who bikes every day, I've been a year-round commuter cyclist for 5 years. And I actually started cycling for economic reasons. Like, I really didn't have a choice. I biked, I bused. That's how I transported myself from place to place. So, you know, there's a part of me that thinks that comment really misses the idea that people need to travel. People need to commute from place to place. And we don't say folks have a right to a car. And so there will be people who need to travel on the roads. I think the more important point, though, is as somebody who bikes every day, one of the things that I notice is how courteous cars are, how almost every interaction I have, which is hundreds of cars a day in my commute to work, to meetings, wherever, people give me space. There really is, most of the time, real harmony on the road. And I think there's a real misperception about what it's like out there on the road.
These, for instance, Steve Magus, I think you mentioned earlier, or we were talking off the air, but there's usually drugs or alcohol involved, whether the drivers are, it's not like it's a fully functioning driver and or bicyclist who's operating their vehicles. It's often something's amiss.
When you look at the national numbers, there's, I think it was the last number, it was about 28% of all the fatal bike crashes involved alcohol. So almost a third of, more than a quarter, almost a third of all the fatal crashes involved alcohol. But I think what Kathleen said is absolutely right. What we hear about and read about in the news are the shipwrecks, and 99.99% of the time, you know, the ships arrive safely, the trains arrive on time, and when something happens that is so significant that we hear about it, it's really a rarity. So,
one of the things we're really excited about, too, is just I see a huge change in culture. When I look at Pelotonia alone and their Ride Safe initiative this year, they sent a packet to all of their Peloton leaders talking about their Ride Safe initiative, how they're prioritizing safety, and said fundraising and safety are equally important to the success of Pelotonia, and went on to talk about what they're doing with Ride Safe Initiative. When I look at the training we're doing with Yay Bikes and the training that Columbus Outdoor Pursuits is doing, people are really hungry for good information about where to be on the road. I think lots of times when we see problems on the road, we either have a motorist who's distracted or a cyclist who's got bad information about where they belong on the road. They're hugging a curb, they're trying to stay out of the way of the motorist, and as a result of that, they're not predictable. They're, you know, too close to the curb, they're weaving in and out, and what a motorist sees is an unpredictable cyclist, which is frightening. And what we're trying to do and what we're seeing over and over again is that when cyclists know where they belong on the road, it really helps create harmony. It helps motorists know, okay, I see a cyclist. They're visible, they're predictable, and really good interactions. Beyond Pelotonia, we see it with the city of Columbus. The new chief of police is a commuter cyclist. Like, cycling is here to stay, and it's actually a really friendly, good culture out there on the roads.
Brian in Grandview, you're on the air. Hi, Brian.
Hello. Really enjoy your program. I used to cycle a long time ago. I'm a baby boomer, so I'm not going to say how long, but I remember, like, I used to cycle like Tosser. It used to be real popular. And I remember when, this is just an observation that I had. I remember when serious cyclists had to wear what they called a fanny bumper. It was a slow-moving vehicle sign that would be on a belt, and it would attach to your waist.
I remember that.
And I remember when you had to have a front and rear light. I remember when your bicycle had to be, like, licensed with the city. And then the sharing thing, that was something that was always kind of like a mystery, because I've seen cyclists where they have, like, impeded the flow of traffic, where they'll just go out in the lane and actually slow down traffic, and that is not supposed to be the case. And then the other thing is then you get cyclists that obey the law, but then you get these other cyclists or people on a bicycle that they're on the sidewalk, they're going the wrong way on traffic, they're zipping through, and that's really dangerous. And I wish there could be some kind of education where both the cyclist and the motorist is educated as far as what the rights are. And then the people that do ride on the sidewalks and things like that, I wish that there would be a little bit more aggressive action taken by
it's interesting. The sidewalk thing is always a problem because it depends on the municipality. They have different laws in different municipalities. It's very confusing. But Brian, we hear you. We're going to talk about everything you've mentioned, and thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Yep. Do you, when there is a bicyclist down, when someone dies or is severely injured, Leslie Strader, do you hear more at the mayor's office from people out there wondering, where should I go? Where should I ride? What are you doing about this?
We don't actually receive extra calls during that time. Usually, of course we're all saddened by it, and we usually send a letter and our condolences, but we don't receive extra questions. But we still continue on with our Share the Road campaign, so that educates motorists and cyclists both on the issues that we've just been hearing about, that both have responsibilities to follow the law and be predictable, as Catherine said.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. So what are the bicyclists' responsibilities?
Same road, same rules. That's kind of what we preach, some degree.
But so how do they learn those? Who teaches them?
That's a great question.
You have to take driver's ed. Mm-hmm. You have to get a driver's license. You have to have a car that's licensed. But bicyclists don't.
They don't need a license. That's true. And the reason they don't is that cars are very dangerous things. So if you mishandle a car, you're going to kill somebody. If you mishandle a bike, you may put yourself in peril, but you're not going to wipe out, the 10 people that are standing in front of you for the most part. So we don't license them. It seems like it'd be a waste of bureaucracy to set up some big thing. But we do encourage people to train and to get some training and to think about how they ride and how are they going to handle situations. One of the best bicycle training I ever had was with the motorcycle group, taking the Motorcycle Safety Foundation class, because they teach you an entire way of thinking about moving around the roads that looks ahead and tries to spot issues and then put yourself in a position far enough ahead of the issue so that you're not taking evasive action at the last minute. And there's a whole a manner of driving a vehicle, whether it's a car or a motorcycle or a bicycle, that I think is very useful.
Have the red light cameras picked up anything interesting in Columbus?
Not that I've heard of, but I'm sure that there are things out there that have been recorded that haven't made it to me. But
well, there was a YouTube video from a security camera that captured a crash in downtown Columbus a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And I've had cases where we've tracked down security camera footage of things. So those things can be helpful, at least in the
Because
the
hypothetically, couldn't a law enforcement pull over a bicyclist and cite them for going through a red light,
not
stopping at a stop sign?
And it does happen.
Mm-hmm. It should happen.
Does it happen that often?
It happens as, I mean,
there's fewer bicyclists.
There are a lot fewer cyclists, and it feels like, you know, again, we hear about the plane crashes, we notice those, but what actually happens is much lower numbers. I think we're really lucky here in Central Ohio. We actually have a nationally award-winning bicycle road safety program, How We Roll, that was funded by the Ohio Department of Transportation and the Ohio Department of Public Safety. It won a Federal Highway Administration Award, which is a pretty big deal for bike-related training classes. And we've offered that class to over 1,000 people, five people at a time. We take five or six people out on the road with two instructors and take people through every kind of road condition you're going to have in Central Ohio. We deliberately take people through construction areas. We deliberately take people, interact with COTA buses, help people learn how to trip a light, and teach people appropriate lane positions so that we are training more and more cyclists to behave safely on the roads.
We think so highly of Catherine's program that it's actually something we've used. We've contracted with them for Kogo Bike Share. When that launched, we wanted to make sure people understood how to ride safely using those bicycles. So we've been thankful that that program exists here locally.
So the Bike Share, you first have to go through training to participate with it?
You don't have to go through training, but when we launched, we wanted to make sure that we had a big safety focus. And so we worked with Yay Bikes for that element of the program.
And we offered free classes twice a week during lunch hour where people could ride a Kogo bike and learn how to ride the city streets downtown.
One of the nice things about the bike share programs around the country is that they generate a huge amount of data because there are chips that track everything. So we know, you know, how many trips and how far and where they're going. And statistically, the crashes for people on those kinds of bikes are way low. There's very low numbers of crashes.
Okay. Go on, Catherine.
Well, and when you're talking about cycling on sidewalks, there's one thing about what are the laws in various municipalities. But when you think from a safety perspective, and it's counterintuitive to most people, the most unsafe place to ride is on a sidewalk because every curb cut, every driveway is an intersection, is a potential place to interface with a car. And cyclists are not traveling at the speed of pedestrians. They're traveling at the speed of bike. And that, it just creates for a bad interface, whether it's legal or not. Sidewalks is not where you want to be as a cyclist. It's not a safe place to be. You want to be in the road and in the appropriate position in the road.
I think that's true. A motorist coming to an intersection to make a turn does a quick glance, and he's looking for 3 to 4 mile an hour things coming towards him. He may not notice a cyclist that's 10 or 15 miles an hour, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 times further away. So he makes that turn and the cyclist enters the intersection thinking, hey, that guy should have seen me. And it creates a lot of problems at sidewalk and crosswalks.
Mm-hmm. Darla and Powell, you're on the air. Hi, Darla.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I just returned from Florida, a family funeral in Florida. My son-in-law's uncle was killed while riding a bicycle at 9 o'clock on a beautiful Florida morning on a lightly traveled road. A driver allegedly lost control of her vehicle and hit him from behind, killing him instantly. One of the things that I've been able to take away from this horrible tragedy is something that a Florida state trooper said, and that was that drivers are not trained to be aware of bicyclists on the road, that the whole issue of driver training needs to be refocused in a way that teaches people that there are vehicles that are not cars on the road. And I just hope that if someone takes that to heart, that perhaps a horrible tragedy like this could be averted if drivers starting from high school driver training are made aware that they need to think about other vehicles other than cars and even motorcycles on the road. And I'll take my response off the air.
Okay, Darla, very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Yeah, the issue, Mandy Trimble, WOSU's Mandy Trimble did a story on that last week about what motorists or drivers in training are taught, and it depends, because they're really only asked a couple questions on the state test, and it's sort of up to the driving school how much they teach them about bicycles on the road.
The Ohio Bicycle Federation and Tricia, you're probably familiar with, has worked for years to try to infiltrate the driver training programs, and that's been a very difficult process. I know she's made some inroads there, but, for example, the private driving schools feel their materials are proprietary, so they don't want to share them. And
trying to respond to what's on the test. If there's only two questions on the test, what's the motive, you know, what's the incentive?
Right.
You want your students to pass the test.
And that's why things like the three-foot law can be very helpful. In Cincinnati, there's three-foot laws in Ohio right now, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Toledo. I know Columbus is considering one. Several other communities in the Cincinnati area are considering them. Are they helpful? I mean, do you give out a bunch of tickets? No. But what they do is provide an educational framework that the city or the state can use to teach a lot of things, that, hey, bicyclists are going to be out there, that bicyclists have the same rights as motorists, and that you need to give them, you know, some space when passing, whether it's 3, 4, 5, whatever the footage is. It's just the concept that the bike is going to be on the road and you should be looking for them, and, you know, don't crowd them and give them some room. So the three-foot law gives the government an opportunity to get into that educational process in a big way.
We're going to take a break. First, I want to thank Leslie Strader from the Columbus Mayor's Office of Environmental Stewardship for joining us today. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll be back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We have some tweets, some emails, and some calls to get to. My guests now, Steve Magus, Cincinnati lawyer and bike-related law specialist, and also Catherine Gervis. She's executive director of Yay Bikes. It's a nonprofit that promotes biking in Central Ohio. If you have a question or comment, you can join the conversation. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. So we have a tweet from Matthew. He writes, "I do not feel safe. Riding on the streets is why I do not ride at all anymore. It's terrifying." A tweet from Andrew, "Only time I feel safe on the roads is when I make it out to Hilliard and beyond. Columbus drivers can be aggressive verbally and careless with their cars. Infrastructure is getting better, but culture is slower coming along." Email from Carl, "Any proposal out there to require helmet wearing when biking on the OSU campus?" Well, OSU campus is one thing, but what about helmet wearing in general? We have to wear a seatbelt in a car, but you still don't have to wear a helmet on a bike.
Nor do you have to wear one on a motorcycle.
Right.
And the motorcycle people have really taken that fight big time. The helmet laws... to me, the issue that you're confronting with helmet laws is, you know, what sort of injuries are you going to prevent on a bicycle? When you look at the numbers, people who, you know, who do you think dies more frequently? People who fall down or people who ride in traffic with cars? And the answer is people who fall down mm-hmm. die about 50 or 60 times more frequently than people who ride their bicycles in traffic. So, and over the age of 65, those numbers go up. So in theory, we ought to wrap them in bubble wrap and put a helmet on everyone once you get to age 65.
Yeah, but Steve, are you saying you don't wear a helmet?
No, I wear a helmet. I preach helmets, but I've seen the...
Because it's safer.
Because I think it, in certain types of crashes, it will help prevent certain types of injuries. We don't promote safe crashing. I'd rather promote safe riding, and I'd rather promote good riding skills. Mm-hmm. But I wear a helmet most of the time, probably 99% of the time. But the And I have a collection of helmets where people have crashed and they've had cracks in the helmets, and I keep them. And, those are displays for people that are not walking around with worse injuries than they could have had. So, yes, I promote it. But I don't feel that a law telling the government, telling me what kind of hat to wear when I choose to ride a bicycle is a good use of government resources.
I think, too, we talk about a difference in education, encouragement, and legislation. I think there's a whole lot of places you can get by changing culture, by educating people, by encouraging people. And legislation can go to a certain place, but then you start talking about enforcement and all the things related to that. I like the idea of keeping legislation to the places where we really need to protect the larger community.
Tim and Warren, you're on the air. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I'm working with a group out here called the Mosquito Lake Greenway Project, and we're trying to make our community out here a bicycle-friendly community.
Good
and
job.
One of the obstacles we have to come across is the complete streets ordinances, mm-hmm. which includes putting bicycles and pedestrian ways in all the new streets are to be built. Can you folks comment on what the status of that is in Ohio and how we're doing with that?
I think complete streets, anytime federal dollars are used in touching a roadway, those run through your Metropolitan Planning Organization, and different Metropolitan Planning Organizations have different policies related to complete streets. I know ours, the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning, MORPSE, the commission here in Central Ohio, has a complete streets policy. I think generally, it's just good policy to think about all travelers. Who needs to travel from place to place, and how do we make sure everybody's accommodated? Again, it goes back to the idea that we don't have assurances that everyone gets to have a single occupancy vehicle, and I don't think we want that. We really do want to support active transportation for a lot of reasons. One, it's just good for individual and community health. It's good for the environment. It's good for a lot of reasons. And so creating ways for people to travel, all different sorts of ways, remembering all different sorts of users, is just smart policy that makes for a more attractive community. You know, one of the things we really haven't talked about is changing demographics. And young adults increasingly are much less interested than, you know, I'm almost 50, than people my age are in getting a driver's license. They're looking at the variety of ways to travel. And I think the communities that are really going to thrive are communities who think about all types of commuters. And so complete street policies are just good for a strong, thriving community.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Tim. Bill in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Grace. So, trying to understand the application of law, and a hypothetical might help. Two-lane highway, the biker is visible. Both the biker and the driver are following the law. At the last minute, the biker veers to the left. The driver has two choices: hit the bike by the cyclist, or veer to the left and risk an oncoming head-on collision. How would the law apply there?
That's an interesting question. When you say suddenly, I mean, it's all very fact-driven. Is the bike, because if the biker, the bicyclist going to make a left turn, is he moving to a left position? Did he start from a position off the road or hugging the white line, or was he already in the lane of travel far enough, maybe on the right tire track? If that was the case, the motorist should not be going so fast that he's going to run over the cyclist no matter where the cyclist is in the lane. From the scenario, it sounds like the motorist is coming up on the cyclist fairly quickly and was taken by surprise when the cyclist moved to the left, and the motorist had intended to pass the cyclist without leaving the lane of travel. That's from a base level, that's an unsafe maneuver for the motorist. The motorist should always try to pass the cyclist by giving sufficient room in most lanes of travel. On most two-lane roads, that's going to require the motorist to go left of center to make that passing maneuver. So it shouldn't matter if the cyclist moves left or right if the cyclist is in the lane. If the cyclist, that's another reason why we preach to cyclists to not hug that white line, because from a visual perspective on someone coming up behind you, if you're on the white line, the motorist sees wide open space between you and the center line and thinks, I can get my car in there. I don't have to leave the lane. Once you get into the lane of travel, then the motorist sees a much narrower space. Once the motorist makes the brake to go over that center line, they generally give you enough room. Where we have problems is where they try to squeeze that car between the cyclist on the white line and the center line, and all of a sudden the cyclist gets real nervous because that car is very close to him. So in your scenario, I think that's kind of how I look at
it.
Wait for the other car to pass. Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of confusion with language share the road. I think what often gets heard is share the lane. And those are really two different things. Appropriately sized travel lanes don't have room for a cyclist and a motorist. You're going to need to change lanes or cross a yellow line just as if there was an Amish buggy in the road or any other slower moving vehicle. That's how you want to treat a cyclist. And I think also, you know, Steve talking about the dangers of hugging the curb or hugging that white line, a cyclist who is trying to stay out of the way of a motorist by hugging a line is creating this visual that perhaps there is room for both of us in this lane. And as soon as they come up on a pothole or something that requires them to move so that they don't crash, things get funky. And so it's important for people to claim appropriate space on the road and interact with each other harmoniously, which, again, mostly happens every day.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that call, Bill in Dublin. Appreciate it. Email from Bob in Columbus. We had an email from Jennifer who talks about driving past people and how nervous they got. Email from Bob in Columbus says, thank you for bringing the concept of predictability to the issue of cars and bicycles using the same road simultaneously. I am too often unnerved by a bicyclist freely alternating between the sidewalk and the roadway, especially to abuses pedestrian crosswalk, those who can abuse the pedestrian crosswalk. That's not what it's for. I can't keep up with the game of now I'm a pedestrian, now I'm a vehicle, now I'm a pedestrian. I think that's an interesting and a good way to put it, that's how some people ride their bikes.
Right. If you're going to be a pedestrian, you dismount from your bike and you're a pedestrian.
Here's a question, an email from Chris that brings up the licensing issue again. Last week in Pittsburgh, I saw a cyclist run a red light just as the other traffic was starting up with their green light. It was very scary how close it was to a bad accident. This cyclist was being stupid, but not the first time I've seen something like this. However, no license plate, so no way for me to report it. Why don't cyclists have to be registered in some way? That's an interesting question.
Well, the issue of registration for cars relates to the ownership of a big, expensive vehicle.
Well, that's registration. Then there's a license plate.
And then the licensing and the testing relates, again, to the fact that these are big, dangerous vehicles. Now, if you call and report someone running a stop sign, what's the policeman going to say? I didn't see it. So it didn't happen.
Whether it's a car or a bike, in all honesty.
I commute, quote unquote, 3 miles from my home to my office, and I could write down 10 different things motorists did wrong during those 3 miles.
Right.
Now, these things tend to get sort of smashed into our brain when it's a bicycle and then thrown back at the cyclist as some sort of, you know, finger wagging, you guys don't follow the law. Mm-hmm. And it's true. Some cyclists are dumb. They do dumb things. Cyclists are people, and the odds of people doing dumb things are 1 out of 1. So people are going to do dumb things, whether they're driving a car or on a bike. When we look at the numbers and we look at what happens in the big picture, generally, cyclists don't want to tangle with cars. They don't want to do dumb things that puts them in the way of 2 tons of metal. So they generally take steps to avoid that. Just like most people drive in their cars, they follow the rules. Some people blow red lights. Some people don't stop at stop signs. You know, it happens. Mm-hmm. But it seems when a cyclist does it, it tends to tar and feather the cycling community with some horrible thing.
And I think we should be clear that when cyclists misbehave by running red lights or stop signs, I'm one of the first people in the room to start wagging my finger and to fuss at them. Like, I think as a community, we want to say clearly we have an expectation that the people in our community behave lawfully and legally on the road.
Now, I've written for years that when we start getting tickets at the same rate that motorists do, we'll have sort of joined the game officially, you know, and I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Byron in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Byron.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Welcome.
Just a quick question. Why do we need to introduce new legislation or laws for what should be common sense driving practices anyway? It seems to me that, you know, a lot of accidents, and I've seen a lot of near misses, mainly because of unattentive drivers. And on that, I will leave the air, and I thank you for taking my question.
I guess you or Catherine were saying, you know, thanks a lot, Byron, for that call. We appreciate it. You'd like to keep the legislation down to a dull roar.
Well, I mean, the 3-foot law to me is interesting because that comes up a lot in the 3-foot discussion. We already have a law on passing. The law in Ohio on passing says you have to pass at a quote unquote safe distance. And what the 3-foot provision before the state legislature says, it just simply defines, it clarifies that law.
Yeah.
And it says when you're passing a bike, a safe distance is 3 feet or more. So it's not some big earth-shattering new thing. It's in 22 different states.
What about a change in the law, the hit-run law, that could make cycling a bit safer, in your opinion?
Well, absolutely. The
hit-run problem is
hit-and-run is an epidemic.
Weird.
It's an epidemic. It's an epidemic here. It's an epidemic around the country. I think it tends to grow during tougher economic times because you have more people driving without insurance. There's, I think, a host of factors that might cause someone to run. They hit some, they have a wreck, they're not licensed, they don't have insurance, maybe they're drunk, something else is going on, or they're just scared. Usually I think it's more of the they don't want to get caught kind of an issue. The hit-and-run law that's on the books now breaks them down. You might be a misdemeanor, you might be a felony, but it's a relatively low-level felony. The House Bill 397 would bump that up, I think it's to a second-degree felony. So you can get serious time if you hit and run. And to me, that when hitting and running
and hitting
is
and running
worse,
anything, right?
Yeah, well, with injuries, where yeah. there's serious okay. injuries. So when hitting and running becomes worse than hitting and staying, you know, then people are going to stick around and do what they ought to do, I think.
Okay, let's get a quick call from Dave in London. You want to talk about rural area bikers?
Yes, I'm all for biking. I'm not a biker per se, but I think it's wonderful what they're doing for the biking community. Bring it on. I'd like to see more trails and stuff. We have the Prairie Grass Trail out here at London. The previous caller was talking about bikes not paying attention to traffic laws. It's horrible out here. They would gain a lot more respect from the rural community if they would just not pass you as you're sitting at a stop sign and blow through the stop
mm-hmm.
sign. It is really bad in the summertime, especially with groups of bikers. And the other thing is, and I'll take my comments off the air,
sure.
the new streets they're putting in that have the bike lanes mm-hmm. and things in Columbus are great, but why aren't they citing people, cars, for using these lanes as turn lanes?
Hmm. Okay. Another question for the police. Dave, thanks for your call. We got to wrap it up. We really appreciate it. Thanks for all the calls. Thanks for all the emails. What about that? Cars, do you think it's just because they don't understand it, Catherine,
I think people get confused. And I think when you look at all of the uncomfortable, scary, bad interactions between motorists and cyclists, I think a lot of it has to do with confusion, and you can't legislate that. That's education, and I see us moving in the correct direction. I guess I'd like to say to everybody out there who wants to ride the roads but is too afraid that there are places, certainly within Yay Bikes, we host monthly rides that are group rides that are all about riding lawfully. We're very deliberate about riding roads and helping people be safe.
We have their website, a link to their website on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Catherine Gervis, thanks for joining us today. Catherine Gervis, she's executive director of Yay Bikes, nonprofit that promotes biking, and also Steve Magus, Cincinnati lawyer and bike-related law specialist. Thanks for joining as always.
Well, thank you. I'm great to be back up here.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.